leading scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, your host for this broadcast. I want to start out today and ask the question, has Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon, simply lost his mind? Has he had a break with reality? We should be concerned because he's now the richest man on planet Earth. And a man that rich has a lot of influence in the world. Money's able to do incredible things. And he has amassed an incredible fortune that continues to roll in day after day after day with the Amazon machine that seems to be wanting to control the entire economic infrastructure of the planet, not just America, of the entire planet. Whether or not he'll ever get to that level is unknown at this point, but considering how far he's come already, I believe his intentions are pretty clear. But now Bezos is addressing a different topic, and that is, what are we going to do with all of the humans that are breeding on planet Earth, soon to overpopulate and destroy the planet? What do we do with all those people? Well, he says, let's ship them all into space. So he envisions a time when there will be perhaps as many as 1 trillion humans populating outer space. And ostensibly, he says that, well, we can build complete living communities for people, say up to 1 million people each, that will be little miniature utopias, self-contained spaceships, cylinders, canisters, where people can live and do some type of work. It's unclear what type of work, but where people can simply be happy living in their utopia. He says, if we're out in the solar system, we can have 1 trillion humans in the solar system, which means we'd have 1,000 Mozarts and 1,000 Einsteins, he said. This would be an incredible civilization. What would this future look like? He says, where would 1 trillion humans live? Well, it's very interesting. Someone named Jerry O'Neill, a physics professor, looked at this question very carefully, and he asked a very precise question that nobody else has ever asked before, and it was, this is the question, is a planetary surface the best place for humans to expand into the solar system? And he and his students set to work on answering that question, and they came to a very surprising for them counterintuitive answer, no. So Bezos went on to describe how the limited surface areas, distance, and gravitational forces of the other planets, blah, 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 there's no other place like home. And he says, we can do this. So Bezos, who owns a space exploration company called Blue Origin, is on a new mission, a new quest. Forget Mars. We don't want to colonize Mars. Too risky, too hostile, too inhospitable. We can do better with our own construction. And away he goes. The article posted here today is written by Caitlin Johnstone on Steemit. It's also appeared in a couple of other places so far. But Caitlin has hit the nail pretty much on the head in a rather sarcastic piece. Perhaps Bezos has really lost touch with reality. Well, here's what she writes. This is a sort of guiding wisdom that is controlling the fate of our species, everyone. The world's most ambitious plutocrat, I would substitute the word technocrat, envisions a world in which, rather than evolving beyond our destructive tendencies and learning to live in collaboration with each other, and our environment, we're simply shipped off into space so that he can stretch out and enjoy our beautiful planet. That's his best idea. Our plutocrat overlords aren't just sociopaths, they're morons, she writes. Bezos' incredibly shallow vision for humanity reminds me of something Julian Assange said at a 2017 London festival via video link about the way Silicon Valley plutocrats are trying to become immortal by finding a way to upload their brains into their computers. Technocracy News has written and posted many articles on transhumanism because transhumanism is joined at the hip with technocracy based on scientism. Assange said, it's a religion for atheists. They'll have eternal life. And given that you're in a simulation, why not program that simulation to have endless drug and sex orgy parties all around you? It's like the 72 virgins, that would be for Islam, but it's like the Silicon Valley equivalent. Caitlin writes after that, first of all, how stupid do you have to be to overlook the fact that science has virtually no understanding of consciousness and doesn't even really know what it is? Even if these idiots find a way to upload their neurological patterns into some AI's virtual simulation, it's not like they'd be there to experience it. Well, yeah, this article is entirely worth reading in its totality, and I encourage you to do so. Jeff Bezos may not be schizophrenic, but he is a technocrat. And I think we should test this concept a bit to ask the question, is Jeff Bezos a Marxist, a leftist, a socialist, a communist? What is he? Well, I can assure you that you never heard about colonizing outer space from a Marxist, a communist, or a socialist. Never. This is so far from their vernacular that it's stating the obvious. Even though Bezos sometimes does appear like a leftist, that's only the appearance. At the core of it, this man is bought into technocracy, hook, line, and sinker, and he's behaving like a typical technocrat mind, using science to solve every conceivable problem of mankind. Got a problem? Science can fix it. Got a big problem? Big science can fix it. Just give us a little more time. And in this case, Bezos has presented himself with a problem that is not only unnecessary, but simply ludicrous, that the human race could even expand to 1 trillion people. But he's created a problem in his own mind and then set about to provide a solution. In that sense, he is absolutely out of touch with reality where the rest of us live and work and love. Jeff, you need to get in touch with the rest of the world and come down out of your floating container in space to address problems on planet Earth. Well, part of those problems are being created by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Yes, the maven of the Green New Deal. Somehow, AOC has the uncanny ability to always have the camera focus on her. I haven't seen somebody like this in my entire lifetime. Now, there were people in the past, I have to say, like John McCain, for instance, the late senator from Arizona, who cherished the camera being on him. But he wasn't always able to get the camera on himself, but he loved it, and he admitted that. In the case of AOC, every time she opens her mouth, somehow she does it in front of a camera. And people are listening to what she's saying. She's dominating the entire conversation on this radical, crazy Green New Deal. Now, how do we know this? Well, former Vice President Joe Biden, who is now running for president in 2020, said in a speech earlier this week that we need a green revolution to tackle climate change. Somebody asked him, well, what are the details of your green revolution, Joe? And he said, well, I'll be releasing them by the end of the month. In other words, he didn't have them yet on the tip of his tongue, but he was going to release his green revolution and all of its details, the specifics, by the end of the month. Well, this wasn't good enough for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who immediately came out in a public speech that was filmed by C-SPAN, of all places, She immediately came out and says, Joe, you're taking the middle of the road approach here. Shame on you. That's not good enough. You need to do more. And people listened to her. And Joe Biden also listened to her. And Joe said, my details will be out by the end of the month. You'll have to wait for them. He said, quote, we do need to finish this green revolution, and we can do it in a way that's rational. We can do it, afford it, and get it done now. But even as he said that, he has to turn around and defend himself against AOC's attack on him, that he's a middle of the roader. And other candidates are responding in similar ways, making AOC the touchstone for anything that comes along concerning the Green New Deal. She's the one that is controlling the dialogue and the discussion in the press. The camera always turns back to her. Well, what do you think, Alexandria? The last story that I want to discuss today has to do with healthcare again. There's been a lot of different stories in the media that relate back to healthcare and how healthcare is being dominated and taken over by artificial intelligence. This article discusses the human side a little bit more of this discussion. But the bottom line is, when healthcare is run by technocrats, don't get sick. That's the worst thing you can do. Just don't get sick. Of course, it's impossible to avoid getting sick or having an accident sometimes. And you need the services of a professional healthcare provider. But the fact is, the entire healthcare industry has been disrupted from top to bottom by technocrats who believe their AI programs know better how to treat you than your own doctor. This article in question here is written by Dr. Jane Orient, MD, from Tucson, Arizona. Dr. Orient, by the way, is a personal acquaintance of mine and a great supporter of my work on technocracy. I've spoken at one of her organizations in Tucson about technocracy, addressed a few hundred doctors and medical professionals to warn them of what's happening with technocracy and medical care. But she writes, people used to know who their doctor was. His name and phone number were on the wall or the refrigerator next to the telephone. He was there for you and could manage most of your problems. When I was about 13, my mom took me to our pediatrician for belly pain. He was on his way out the door, but he stopped to take care of me. He diagnosed appendicitis based on history and physical examination. He called his favorite surgeon, Billy, a Tucson legend, who came from the golf course to meet me in the emergency room. Within hours, my red-hot appendix was in a jar. My parents paid the hospital bill, about 10 days' pay for a construction worker, and I was discharged a few days later. Today, the patient with abdominal pain could wait for hours to even see the ER provider, possibly a nurse practitioner or physician assistant, who had never seen a case of acute appendicitis. She'll probably get a CT scan after another wait. Eventually, doctor on call may take her to the operating room, hopefully before the appendix ruptures, and the bill will be beyond the means of ordinary people. She continues, I used to be able to direct admit patients from my office and send them with a set of orders to the hospital admitting office. For years, this has been impossible. The hospital is decidedly unfriendly to independent doctors. There's now a gatekeeper in the emergency room, and most patients are under the control of a hospitalist. The hospital, still Catholic, at least in name, is now owned by a huge national conglomerate. Recently, it thwarted all efforts to keep it from dehydrating a patient to death, despite lack of an advance directive or permission from next of kin. The patient's mother disputed the diagnosis of brain death. The gastroenterologist of her choice was willing and able to place a feeding tube needed in order to transfer the patient to a skilled nursing facility, but the hospital would not permit it. An outside physician whom the mother had called on was removed from the patient's room by security when she was merely praying with the mother. The mother could not get a phone call returned from the attending physician. Who was the doctor? apparently, the hospital system. And this really is the gist of what's happened here. Doctors are out, the system is in. The system, assisted by advanced AI technology for diagnosis and who knows what else, will now take the place of your doctor. What they decide is law, so to speak. When they say that their science is settled, you can believe in their minds it's settled and you better like it or else. If you don't like it, you'll be branded a denier. And once you're branded a denier, the rest of your healthcare visit will not go particularly well for you. I want to take you back to 1934 when the Technocracy Study Course was originally penned. That's the Bible of Technocracy Incorporated for the world. It was written by M. King Hubbard, the co-founder of Technocracy Incorporated in New York City. And he wrote on page 170 something that gives us a view into the mind of a technocrat as far as it relates to healthcare. He wrote, in other words, the load factor of our doctors and our hospitals is as far below capacity at the present time as that of our power plants. Stated conversely, if the public health personnel and equipment were allowed to operate at full load in the most efficient manner, according to present technical standards, it would be possible virtually to eliminate most contagious diseases within 10 years. Close quote. This is the mindset of a technocrat. Maximum efficiency, full load, specialization of services. This is not the kind of medical system, by the way, that America ever bargained for or realized was coming. But here it is. And again, I'll say that technocracy was rejected by the end of the 1930s and 1940s for good reason, because Americans saw through this utopian pipe dream and said not just no, but heck no. We're not going here. And they sent them packing. Back then, it was easier to understand what technocracy was because it was quite visible. In fact, the entire nation understood technocracy because it had been in the newspapers continuously for several years. And they finally said, we've had enough of this. Take it away. Americans do not enjoy this advantage today of having technocracy in the media. And it's interesting to note that Technocracy News and Trends, this website, is still the only website on the face of our planet that takes a serious, critical view of historic technocracy and how it's being played out today in the form of sustainable development, Green New Deal, artificial intelligence, you name it. This is where it all came from. Now, it's true that journalists and publishers are taking an increased interest in technocracy, but it's far from the level of being able to alert the majority of American citizens that this craziness needs to stop. I'll say in closing, if you have an opportunity, please head over to patreon.com/technocracy. And if you can, support this work with a monthly pledge. Even $1 or $2 a month is helpful. It not only helps us financially, but it also is an encouragement to keep on with this work. And it also gives you some skin in the game that you're a partner, a co-laborer, if you will, with me to get this word out to American people. I simply can't do it by myself as one person. Just can't be done. I need your help, pure and simple. So if you can help, please do. Go to patreon.com/technocracy. Until next time, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. Have a great day.